Welcome back to my series on morality. My name is Father Cody, and we're in part two. So these first five parts of the series are kind of like a circle, where they point in towards the middle. So although these may seem out of order, or they might not seem to flow in the structure that we usually like for a series like this, I want you to see it more like a kaleidoscope, that every time we turn it a little bit, we see morality from a different perspective. We get a new tool to work with. Once we finish this first part, the first five parts of the series, then we'll move into the practical applications of this stuff. That's when we put all of these things that we have learned in the first five sessions together and put them into practice in the modern world. So this second part is called Action, Intention, and Circumstances. One of the challenges we struggle with when we talk about morality is that we have to understand what we are culpable for. For instance, if I was walking down the road and all of a sudden tripped and fell, was I responsible for tripping? Well, maybe. Depends on if I was watching where I was going or intentionally tripped over something. Or another situation, if I was walking down the street and someone was murdered, am I responsible for the murder? No. Just because I'm walking down that particular street where someone happened to be murdered, I didn't murder the person. And so this topic of action, intention, and circumstances guides us to realize how culpable we are for our actions and to give us language to speak on how we are culpable, what part did I play, and all the stuff that goes around our actions. So let's start out with action. There's nothing more important in the realm of morality than action. It answers the question, what did I do? Without understanding what I did or what the person did, we can't really address whether the action was moral or immoral. We don't know what happened. And that's one of the big challenges we'll have as we discuss the topic of action. We have to be clear about what's going on. Often, our first goal is to judge the action, to determine whether it's right or wrong immediately. Doing so can easily dismiss what's going on. For instance, if I said someone stole something, well, I'm already making them liable because I told them they stole it. Or if I said someone murdered someone, well, murder is immoral, therefore the action's already immoral. If that did correspond to the action itself, then it does make sense. We can judge it that way. Another issue we run into when we talk about action, what did the person do, is that we tend to be too vague. Well, he did something. Well, that's great. What did he do? What happened? If we don't know what happened or we're too vague in our language, then we don't really know what to do with it. Was it moral or immoral? What happened? We don't have an answer to our question. So we have to be more or less specific. We can't just be general and say something bad happened or he did something wrong. That's a judgment and a vague statement. On the other side of it, we can easily go too far and be immensely descriptive, such as he used a knife to cut a slit across the man's throat, causing massive amounts of blood to pour out of the wound. Okay, we didn't need all that information. Most of that is useless. Whether he bled or not is not really important for the morality of the action. Neither is it important that he cut a slit, mainly that there was a cut made. So although that is immensely descriptive and gives us quite a few details on what actually happened, it doesn't help us in the realm of morality. We can easily simplify that statement to, he cut the man's throat. That's what happened. So we have to be both specific about what actually happened and not be vague and make it all colored, or to be super judgmental to the point where we already judge the action as immoral. This is our task. Whenever we deal with something of a moral character, we have to first address what the action is. What are we determining to be moral or immoral, and what does it look like? As I venture into these three topics, action, intention, and circumstance, I'm going to give you some scenarios that will work through all three of them so that you can see as it unfolds what the actions are, how to be clear with our actions, and how it merges into intention and circumstances. So here's our first scenario. As walking along the trail that overlooks the Grand Canyon, as I was gazing at the canyon below, I tripped over a rock and stumbled into a disabled person who went crashing down the slope into the basin of the Grand Canyon. The person died. So already we can declare this to be sad. But what is the action? If you want to pause for a moment to think about it, I recommend it. What happened? What was the actual action of the person? So, was it action one? I murdered the disabled person. Action two. I knocked into a person. Action 3. I tripped over a rock while walking. There are actually a few different actions, but the one that we should focus on is action 3. I tripped over a rock while walking. That's what happened. My culpability is as much as I tripped. And I was walking. I didn't try to kill the disabled person. That wasn't my action. Neither did I try to push them off a cliff. It was a consequence of the fact of tripping. Scenario 2. After being rejected from two food banks and realizing that I have no money, I walked into the supermarket to get some food. Once the aisle was busy so that no one could see me, I took a box of chocolates from the shelf. I made my way out of the store and then a distance away before eating the chocolates. What is my action? Action 1. Stealing chocolate. Action 2. Taking chocolate from the store. Or action 3. Taking an item from the store. If we say action 1, we're already declaring the action to be immoral, because the action and intention are the same, to steal. If we say action 2, that is true. I did take chocolate from the store. And action 3 is just as equal to action 2, taking an item from the store. The extra descriptor of chocolate is kind of inconsequential. It will become more important later, because the actual action of the person was to take something from the store. Scenario 3. As I was walking down the street, I noticed a guy who is my enemy. He constantly harasses me and belittles me. Making an effort to walk by him, I pushed him in such a way that he lost his balance and fell into a food cart, covering him in oil that caught fire. Noticing the fire, I called for help, then slowly backed away so that I didn't cause any more problems. What is my action? Action 1. Set my enemy on fire. Action 2. Bump into a man. Action 3. Push a man into a food cart. This is where it gets a little tricky. So my action was not to set my enemy on fire. Otherwise, I would have actually set him on fire. That happened to be a consequence of the action of pushing. I could say I bumped into him, which is somewhat true, but that's kind of dismissing what actually happened. According to the scenario, I pushed him, and I chose to push him into a food cart. Not just into a wall, not just bump lightly into him. We have to be clear about what the person was doing, pushing him into something. Those are important details in this case. So scenario 4. I am in the midst of a major exam. As I take the brutal test, my eyes begin to wander. All of a sudden, I notice that some of the answers to the exam are posted on the wall. I try to avert my eyes, but the answers are stuck in my head. So I write them on the exam. It's not my fault the answers are posted on the wall. What is my action? Action 1. I cheated. Action 2. My eyes wandered across the room. Action 3. I saw the answers to the test. So this one's challenging. Technically speaking, this person did not cheat. His cheating required the intention of looking for the answers. Action 2 is the most accurate, because all the person did was let their eyes wander. Whether they saw anything or not was not up to them. The action of letting their eyes wander has other implications, but for all intents and purposes right now, that is what happened. The person let their eyes wander. Action 3 is not really up to them. You can't choose whether you see the answers. If the answers are posted, so be it. Now, there is a secondary action amidst all this. So the first action was to let the person's eyes wander. The second was to choose to write them down. At the point the person saw the answers, he or she has the choice then to write them down or not. But at that point, they're in their head, so what are you going to do? The virtue ethic says you can do a whole number of things, but we'll get to that in the next topic. So that's action. Remember, action addresses the question, what happened? What was the situation? What action did I do? What was I responsible for as far as my action? So next is intention. Intention is the question we are most interested in. It's the one that asks the question, why did you do it? So in the same way with action, we have to be careful with intention. that we don't color it too much, but be accurate to what the person's intention probably was. The challenge we'll always have is if we're talking about other people, we can only guess intentions. We can guess them from the situation, from how the person reacts, or maybe their own words. For ourselves, however, it's a lot easier. I know why I did what I did, and sometimes I can deceive myself into thinking I had better intentions, or I can deceive myself into thinking I had worse intentions. Another big challenge with intention, being clear about what the intention was. What was the reason the person did this? So in that way, we have to be careful. In some ways, we can easily cultivate intention to have culpability. If it already seems like the person has done something immoral, it's immoral, we're done. Just like if the action is immoral, such as stealing or murder, we're done. It's immoral. Same with intention. If we become too strict and make it too judgmental, we're done. Action is immoral. If we become too loose and vague, we don't know what actually happened. So we have to be clear and precise in our language. What happened? Now for our scenarios. Scenario 1. I was walking along the trail that overlooks the Grand Canyon. As I was gazing at the canyon below, I tripped over a rock and stumbled into a disabled person who went crashing down the slope into the basin of the Grand Canyon. The person died. What was my intention? Intention 1, to see the Grand Canyon. Intention 2, to kill a disabled person. Intention 3, to be lost in the scenery and ignore everyone. Since we don't know the person, we have to kind of guess. My guess is intention 1 is the most accurate. The person was there to see the Grand Canyon. Intention 2 just doesn't make sense. If the person wanted to kill a disabled person, there's a much better way to do it. Then we would have started with, I pushed them off a cliff, versus I tripped into them. Intention 3 works. Yes, I could have the intention to be lost in the scenery and thus ignore everyone around me. If that's the case, culpability has changed, and we'll talk about that in the last topic for this session. Because if my desire is to be lost and ignore everyone, I am slightly liable for not paying attention to my surroundings. That's the challenge. But as far as continuing on with this, intention 1 or 3 could be valid, and we can use either one of them as we move forward into understanding the culpability of this person for the death of this disabled person. Scenario 2. After being rejected from 2 food banks and realizing that I have no money, I walked into the supermarket to get some food. Once the aisle was busy so that no one could see me, I took a box of chocolates from the shelf. I made my way out of the store and then a distance away before eating the chocolates. What is my intention? Intention 1, to steal chocolate. Intention 2, to eat some chocolate. Intention 3, to have something to eat. Technically speaking, it's intention 1. You don't go into a store knowing that you're going to take something and walk out with it and not declare it to be stealing. So in a way, we could already declare this to be immoral. You can't steal. If I wanted to keep going with this topic and advance the circumstances, the situation around it, then I could say intention 2 or 3 are equally valid. To eat some chocolate or to have something to eat. Clearly, if someone has been rejected from 2 food banks, their goal is to get some food. What they choose for food is a different topic. It's actually the next topic. So as far as we're concerned, any one of these 3 are valid, and we'll talk about the full scenario here in a moment once we get to circumstances. Scenario 3. As I was walking down the street, I noticed a guy who is my enemy. He constantly harasses me and belittles me. Making an effort to walk by him, I pushed him in such a way that he lost his balance and fell into a food cart, covering him with oil that caught fire. Noticing the fire, I called for help, then slowly backed away so that I didn't cause any more problems. What was my intention? Intention 1, to kill my enemy. Intention 2, to harass my enemy. Intention 3, to push my enemy into harm's way. This gets tricky. So intention 1 is wrong. His goal is not to kill him. We know that from the scenario itself. He pushes him. There's no way he could have known that being pushed into a food cart full of oil would catch him on fire, or that the fire itself would kill him. There's no way he could intend that. So it's just out. Intention two, to harass my enemy. Absolutely. Pushing someone into a wall, a person, a cart, whatever it might be, is a form of harassment. So he's trying to show his anger and frustration towards this man by doing what he can to make his life a little bit more miserable. That is truly his intention. Intention three, to push my enemy into harm's way. Maybe. It's not clear yet whether he had the purpose of actually causing harm. It sounds like it's more of a venting of anger causing distress or some sort of problematic situation more than true harm. Now that being said, there is a secondary intention that's hidden within this scenario. The first one is obvious, to push him into a cart. That's the action with the intention of causing some level of harm or mayhem or harass him. The second intention was to leave the scene. He was not going to help. So his intention was not to help him when he's on fire, but to leave quickly. So he didn't intend to actually do much, but consequently intended to cause harm later by not doing anything to help. Scenario 4. I am in the midst of a major exam. As I take the brutal test, my eyes begin to wander. All of a sudden, I notice that some of the answers to the exam are posted on the wall. I try to avert my eyes, but the answers are stuck in my head. So I write them on the exam. It's not my fault the answers were posted on the wall. What's my intention? Intention 1. To let my eyes wander. Intention 2. To let my eyes wander that I might find some answers. Intention 3. To cheat on the exam. If it's intention 3 to cheat, you would look at someone else's paper, not just the room around you. So if someone had the intention to cheat, we expect the situation to be slightly different. If it is intention 2, which could be possible, some people disguise their true intention under a more noble cause, such as, I let my eyes wander that I may just think and ponder what the test may be about, or to think up answers in my head so that I may do well on this exam. Well, that's nice, and a lot of people have that intention. But that's not the only possible intention. He could have desired to see the answers or hope that the answers were there somewhere, so it's not really cheating, but it's not using my own brain as well. So either intention or 1 or 2 could be valid, and that's why we have to go further and start to talk about the last topic, which is circumstances. So circumstances. Circumstances is the most fun part of this entire session, because this is what gives everything color. Whereas everything else tried to be more or less black and white, we have an action, we have an intention. They're pretty clear-cut to some extent. Circumstances are not. They're all the other factors that go around an action itself, around the circumstances, around the intention, the action, everything. Circumstances colors everything. What else happened? What else may be a factor in our moral decision-making? Once we get to this point, we can actually make a decision whether the action was immoral or moral, which is where we finally get to our final point. It's very exciting. So, scenario 1. I was walking along the trail that overlooked the Grand Canyon. As I was gazing at the canyon below, I tripped over a rock and stumbled into a disabled person who went crashing down the slope into the basin of the Grand Canyon. The person died. What are the circumstances? There are many circumstances, yet they're not all that critically important. The rock that he tripped over is important. If the rock were not there or he had noticed it, then this whole situation would not have happened. The fact that he's not watching where he's going or not as careful, especially in a place that's very dangerous, you know, a huge canyon, shows some level of malintent. He wasn't really caring about the people around him. He wasn't concerned about where he was, which leads to laziness of not being attentive. Similarly, the disabled person is not as critical. But when you're around someone who has issues of some kind, an elderly person, a sick person, a person who's disabled, all these different situations, as good, kind people, we would be more careful so that they're not harmed more by our actions. Generally, we should be careful for everyone, but there's certain people that need a little bit more care. So in this way, there are several circumstances that do color the situation. There are a few more that we could easily address. Why was there no guardrails? If you're in a canyon area, wouldn't you assume there'd be some kind of safety, especially for a national park? So that's one of the things we have to address as well. Why were things so strange? Why did this happen? There are circumstances that are not all that important. Whether the disabled person could walk or move, not that important. Other than that, everything else kind of colors it to some extent. So, given the fact that the action was to trip, the intention was to see the Grand Canyon, and the circumstances were there's a rock the person didn't see and tripped, this would not be a situation of immoral action. The person had acted as morally as they could, given certain circumstances. That being said, even though we can declare the action moral, that does not mean the person doesn't feel guilt. Guilt is that sense that something went wrong and we were somehow liable for it. Yeah, he's liable. He tripped over the rock and fell into that person. It wasn't his intention, so it wasn't immoral. But we can still feel bad because a bad thing happened, an unfortunate situation. If, however, the person was negligent, and they are negligent in the sense that they weren't watching where they're going, or intentionally tripped over a rock, or just not caring about the people around them, now there's more of a moral obligation, and the action becomes more immoral. Not necessarily fully immoral, unless it's true gross negligence. Now the same thing could be said for the park. If the park was negligent in that they knew it was a dangerous area and that they weren't sweeping properly or didn't have proper guardrails, then the park is liable for what happened because they could have had safety measures in place that would have prevented the situation. So although the situation is kind of clear in some ways, it becomes more interesting as we see all the different circumstances that surround it. Scenario 2. After being rejected from two food banks and realizing that I have no money, I walked into the supermarket to get some food. Once the aisle was busy so that no one could see me, I took a box of chocolates from the shelf. I made my way out of the store and then a distance away before eating the chocolates. What are the circumstances? Well, circumstances are fairly clear. He was rejected from two food banks. That's not normal, and we'll talk about that more here in a moment. He has no money. That's an important circumstance. The supermarket was busy. He knew what he was doing. This wasn't some random action or forgetfulness. Oh, I didn't realize I had that in my pocket. Sorry. But there is a deep level of intention here. He wants to steal the chocolate. What are not useful? To some extent, the aisle being busy is not all that useful. To another extent, it is, because it shows his own intention, that he wants to disguise his actions and not let the security cameras see him. The distance from the store before eating the chocolates is not important. That's just a piece of the scenario that shows his own culpability. Why would you walk away from the store if you thought you'd done something right? Our own actions show us whether our actions are truly moral or not. So let's talk about things in a different light. What other circumstances color this situation? Such as, why was he kicked out of two food banks? Was he drunk? A lot of food banks will not allow people who are high or drunk. Or maybe he had gone so frequently to the food banks that they had kicked him out for a little while because they only have so many supplies. Or maybe he really didn't try. Like he became belligerent in the food bank or did something to get himself kicked out. That would color the situation too. Similarly, chocolate. Chocolate is a very important part of the scenario. If he's looking for food, chocolate isn't the way to go. Although it is easy to steal, there's lots of ways to ask people for food. Usually in a supermarket, if someone's truly begging for food and wants food, people will give them food. He did not have to steal. So there are a lot of situations that could have changed this scenario and allowed him to have a more moral action of getting food without having to steal. Largely, though, he has stolen the food. There's no way around it. And therefore, his action is immoral. Scenario 3. As I was walking down the street, I noticed a guy who is my enemy. He constantly harasses me and belittles me. Making an effort to walk by him, I pushed him in such a way that he lost his balance and fell into a food cart, covering him in oil that caught fire. Noticing the fire, I called for help and slowly backed away so that I didn't cause any more problems. What are the circumstances? This one's easy. Guy's my enemy. If I already have a dislike of him or animosity towards him, it's going to change and color my actions. I'm not going to think, oh, that was an accident. No, I have hatred towards this man. I'm going to make sure he pays for it. Made an effort to walk by him. It's not like it was an accidental encounter where they happened to be walking on the same side of the street. He made a purposeful intention to go to this man and do something. He made an effort to walk by him, pushed him. The food cart was there. The food cart was full of oil. All these things are important situations because they color what's going on. These are the circumstances. What's not useful is the harassment or belittlement. We already know that's part of it. It's only important because of the fact that the guy is his enemy. So let's look at this. What happened? First action, push the guy. Intention, to push him. We can almost say now to cause him some level of harm because he's pushing him into something that's not just a wall or a random space so he loses his balance. No, pushing him into something like a food cart or a wall causes harm. So, by the circumstances, we can assume harm. Also, in light of all that, the second action was not to help. His intention was to back away without making it look like he did anything or to let the person be harmed. There is something from the circumstances that color this in such a way that it looks like he wants to harm him, not just harass him. And therefore, his action of pushing him, even though the other circumstances didn't quite follow, we declare the act of pushing him slightly immoral. He meant to cause harm. He meant to do something to him. He knew that out of hatred. And that's what the challenge is. If he did out of playfulness, then we would see him helping out or saying he's sorry or something like that. But that's not what happened. He liked the fact that harm was caused. Scenario 4. I am in the midst of a major exam. As I take the brutal test, my eyes begin to wander. All of a sudden, I notice that some of the answers to the exam are posted on the wall. I try to avert my eyes, but the answers are stuck in my head, so I write them on the exam. It's not my fault the answers are posted on the wall. What are the circumstances? It's a major exam. If it weren't a major exam, then we would not treat this with such gravity. But because it's something important, we also realize we do more things in major exams to help ourselves achieve what we want. The answers are posted. That's not the person's fault. That's the teacher's fault. They should know when they enter a classroom whether the answers to their exams are posted on the wall or not. So whether he saw them or not is not his fault. Allowing his eyes to wander. Well, yes, but we can do that for many reasons, such as to think or to ponder things or to help our minds rest for a moment. One action he did that was a circumstance is to write the answers on his paper. He didn't have to do that. Now let's go through two different ways of addressing the situation. So first of all, the action was to let his eyes wander. His intention was to let his mind rest so as to think of the proper answers. The circumstance was he saw the answers to the exam. That action is not immoral. He could not have chosen to see those answers or did not have the intention to, so therefore it's not immoral. The second way of addressing this scenario is far more interesting. His action was to let his eyes wander. His intention was to help himself do well on the exam by letting his eyes wander. The third part was to write down the answers on his exam. He had lots of ways he could address the same situation without writing those answers down. He could have ignored them. He could have left the answers blank. He could have gone to the teacher and said, "Did you know the answers are posted?" which could have given everyone the opportunity to get those answers right. It could have had the whole exam scrapped. Who knows? This falls into the realm of virtue ethics. He, as an individual who has 2, 5, 6, 8 different kind of scenarios he could pull from this, has a choice of what he wants to do, all of which are moral. Writing the answers down is moral because he didn't choose to see them. Choosing not to write them down is a moral decision. It can be colored depending on how important this exam is. telling the teacher is a moral decision. Choosing to scrap the exam could be a moral decision or immoral, depending on what's going on. If this exam was necessary for his financial well-being, and if he failed this exam, he would lose his job and therefore can't provide for his family, that would be an immoral decision to be so blatant about what happened, especially when everything so far is moral. So although it seems simple, the way we react to some of these scenarios is very complicated, and we have a lot of options that don't always fit within the realm of morality. They are all moral, and we have to choose as individuals how to react. This concludes session 2, which is on action, intention, and circumstances. I hope these ideas help clarify how we think about our own actions, how we engage with the things of the world, what is considered moral and immoral, and how we come to our own conclusions about what we ought to do, what is right and wrong, and how we live good, upright lives in the world.